The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the weekly Dharma series.
We're going to spend the next 40 minutes or so together talking a little bit more about awareness. It's an interesting role, or just we have buildings in some ways, whole institutions, books, statues, and being here together in community is they're all reminders of this practice of awareness, this lifestyle of awareness. And so often it can be complicated. There's so many books and on mindfulness and everything, the Buddhist path, there's all the lists. So it can be useful to really look at what we're doing when we meditate or when we try to be aware, when we're practicing. Sayadaw Utejaniya, an important teacher and a teacher that Mark's been influenced by and that some of these weekly practice group talks are in some ways inspired by his teachings. And we have a lot of his teachings on our website. I forgot what I was going to say about him. Well, he talks a lot about awareness. He just keeps talking about awareness. And the more you talk about awareness and the process of awareness and how it works, hear about it, read about it, they're all reminders. So this phrase I used in the guided meditation is one definition, you could say, of awareness practice. Remember to recognize the present moment's experience. And that comes from Steve Armstrong, a teacher in our tradition. So there's a few different elements to that. The remember. So the main function of mindfulness per se is remembering. The literal meaning of the word in Pali is to remember. And so if I, for instance, asked us to feel our right hand, we could all do that. So why don't you do that if you don't mind? So that's awareness, and it doesn't take much effort. But if we were to just sit here, like now I could say, well, let's feel our left hand. Let's be aware of our left hand. Be aware of our seat touching the cushion. Be aware of the mind. So awareness isn't difficult, like, or can you hear the fan? So it's not difficult, but remembering, we could be sitting here, if I wasn't reminding us, we could sit here for a long time and not remember to recognize that we're aware. So it's the remembering function of mindfulness, of sati. So this is something we can do when we're not hearing instructions, when we're not being guided, be aware of this, be aware of that, we remind ourselves. And like I was saying in the meditation, it doesn't matter what the object is. So in some ways, this is the whole of our practice, is remembering just all throughout the day. And it's doesn't take a lot of effort. And it's not a muscular effort or a body effort. It's actually a wisdom effort, an effort of the mind. And it's kind of like landing. So that's the first element, remembering, reminding ourselves. And then remember to recognize the present moment's experience. So recognize So if I asked us to pay attention to the fan, we can remember to do that. And then the next element is this recognition or this perception of just what that sound is, just how we perceive that. And this is sort of a feeling into what whatever the experience is, so that it's not just remember to recognize, we notice something, we notice the body, and then what usually happens is it's like skimming off the surface of the water. So we remember in a moment, oh, yeah, I'm aware. And then we plunge right back down. So we're just recognizing whatever it is. Right now, hearing my voice, understanding, remembering to recognize, this is what's happening. I'm sitting here, I'm feeling this way, hearing this. And then the last element, remembering to recognize the present moment's experience. So, the present moment's experience. In every moment, like I mentioned in the guided meditation, something is being known by the mind. There's a lot of things being known by consciousness that we can be aware of. And it doesn't matter what we're aware of. So, whatever you're aware of now, for example, then recognize. And it's subtle, and we often overstrive. And many of us start meditating with an object-oriented practice, and so we're getting interested in the object, but in this style, we're interested in the awareness. So it doesn't take a lot of effort to recognize that awareness is working in every moment. It's actually it's a wisdom effort. It's a relaxing. Because any kind of trying is then the mind's trying to create something, trying to do something, and it's not aware. So this awareness practice is a lot of different elements coming together. So it's not just mindfulness, at least in the way that some of our teachers talk about awareness practice. And I like, this again is from Steve Armstrong, his definition of awareness practice as the coming together of five qualities of confidence. So some interest, you could say, or confidence that in the mind itself, like some interest there, some confidence that there's something to be done, that we're not seeing the full picture, that we're clueless. But there's some confidence that there's something the mind can do. There's some effort that can be made. And maybe that a lot of times that confidence comes from hearing teachings that give us some direction, like remember to recognize the present moment's experience. So we hear that, and that sounds interesting, like that might lead to something good. And so out of that confidence, then we're willing to make some effort. So the next quality is perseverance. So just doing what we were doing, remembering to recognize the present moment's experience, noticing if the mind is aware or not. So making effort, and that area of effort is an area where we often either make too much effort or wrong kind of effort, an effort that's trying to make something happen, trying to get rid of a certain experience. So it's the work of the mind, and it's not hard work. I mean, it's not difficult. It's just difficult to remember. So that's why perseverance is a nice translation, because We're just persevering. It's not like anyone's going to be mindful, you know, continuously. I mean, at least at probably the level most of us are at. So then it's really perseverance. Sayadaw Tejaniya says, this practice isn't a 100-yard dash, it's a marathon. We're practicing all day long, from the moment we wake up till the moment we go to sleep, to be aware, to cultivate these wholesome qualities of the mind. So it doesn't matter how many times we wake up and notice the mind has been lost in thought, because next moment the mind's aware. And so it's that perseverance, just what's the mind aware of now? Is the mind aware? And I say these as questions, but it's not necessarily that you will be verbalizing those. It's more just in your own experience. Sometimes I experience it as, particularly in being aware of seeing, like as sort of a ground object shift, or just it's like landing. These are all metaphors for trying to describe what awareness feels like. And that's an interesting investigation you can hold, is what does it feel like to be aware? What's the difference between being aware and not being aware? So like with seeing, sometimes it feels like when I'm aware, it's like, oh yeah, I'm aware, I'm seeing. Seeing is happening all the time. And how often are we aware that we're seeing? It's very easy to get lost in the concepts of the visual objects, already thinking that's Jamie, for example. So we have some confidence and we make some persevering effort to remember, which is the third quality, sati, mindfulness, remembering. And then the more we remember to recognize the present moment's experience, there's more stability of mind, which is the fourth quality. And this quality is samadhi in Pali, which is often translated as concentration. But concentration can have connotations of focusing, like really concentrating on a particular object. But really, in this context, stability of mind, samadhi, and in this style of practice, the samadhi that arises. So samadhi technically means temporarily the mind isn't afflicted by greed, aversion, or delusion. And so there's two ways to have samadhi. One is to do a more concentration style practice, or more an object-oriented practice, where the mind is attending to one object and there isn't room in the mind to get caught in greed, aversion, and delusion. And then there's wisdom samadhi, where the mind is, what's continuous isn't necessarily the same object, but what's continuous is awareness with right view or with wisdom. So in every moment, as much as possible, as continuously as possible, the mind's remembering to recognize the present moment's experience and to practice seeing it in terms of right view, in terms of an object being known by awareness, instead of how we usually view things, which is in terms of me and my problems and my thoughts about things and how I feel. So the stability of mind that arises during this awareness practice is because the mind is relatively stable, because it's protected from with wisdom. Just, you can see how even just thinking about it, if we were to be really consistently, not that we would be completely consistent, but have some interest throughout the day, some persevering effort, just to know in each moment to remember to recognize present moment's experience. It's an object being known, now another object being known. It's nature, it's not self. This motions, sensations in the body are the nature of the mind and body, not self, next moment. So that would lead to a stability of the mind. The mind wouldn't be as pushed around because it would be aware, be recognizing. Even if a big storm, an emotional storm arose, okay, this is something being known. Now it's being known. So that's the fourth quality, stability of mind. And the more the mind is aware relatively continuously with this right view, seeing things as nature, as objects arising, then the mind learns, understanding arises, insight. And these can be a whole range of things. It's Saito Tejaniya talks about data. So when we're aware, data is coming in. And so we can have insights on the level of very mundane things when we're aware. This works better in my interactions with that person. And also we can just be aware, we can have insights about how to practice, which are actually really important insights. So a lot of the wisdom that's really interesting and that we need is how to practice. Oh, now I remember what I was going to say, which is a really, I really am glad I remembered it because I like this. What he says is that it's not you that meditates, it's the ideas in your mind that meditate. So when you sit down to meditate, we can get interested in what the mind is doing, in the work of the mind, and any assumptions, any ideas, which we need ideas about meditation in order to meditate. If we started meditating without any instruction, we wouldn't know what to do. So we can get interested, what is the mind doing? What are the ideas in the mind about meditation? And it's not just techniques. It's, does the mind think that no sounds is better than sounds? Does the mind think that paying attention to the breath is better than being aware of something else? Is the mind trying to have a certain experience? So through being aware, understanding arises, and that's really the goal of meditation. If you want to speak of a goal, or why do we practice? What is the utility of this awareness practice? We practice because we want to understand. And I find that this emphasis to be really energizing and inspiring. Saito Tejaniya talks a lot about, again, when you're meditating, look at the ideas in your mind. Are you meditating just to have a calm, peaceful experience? Or are you meditating because you want to understand? You want to see something you haven't seen yet? And to me, that's really interesting, because it's like, then that's sort of where the confidence comes from too, that we understand that there's suffering, and we seem to fall into patterns of suffering. There's suffering in the world. We feel it in our hearts. It's a burden. We want to do something about it, but we see that most of our efforts to address suffering seem to create more suffering. So that's wisdom, that we don't know what to do. So we need more data. We need, because if we don't know what to do, if what we're doing isn't working, then it's that humility that, okay, I don't know what to do. But there's some confidence that this practice might lead to more data, to more understanding. I've actually been using this sort of in my practice, this honestly acknowledging that I don't know. And particularly like when I'm caught in like a decision, should I do this or do that? Or just in general, when the mind's caught in some way, and there's some assumption that I should know what to do. And if I just think about it hard enough, but that whole, and it's so stressful, that whole back and forth. And but if I'm really honest, I just don't know what to do. Because if I, again, this is like with suffering, if we knew how to free ourselves from suffering, we already would have. So that coming from that place of not knowing is like, I actually don't know. And then what's really useful about that is it, then we're willing to learn. Then we're willing to really be beginners. This practice is really for beginners. I mean, it's a beginner's practice. It's not something that, you know, you get good at and then you just, you've got it, because it's new every moment. And we don't know what we don't know. So then we just start where we are. Is the mind aware? If the mind's going to learn anything, it has to be aware. It has to be receptive, open. And then we notice, oh, maybe the mind's a little aware, but it's wants something. Oh, that's interesting. Can the mind really be receptive and taking in new information when it's got this agenda? Or we just notice that that agenda is painful, that's suffering. So we're practicing with our intelligence and with creativity. I know when I started practicing or in some early years, and not that this is necessarily bad, but it's just interesting when I remember noticing at certain points, like I was just practicing and kind of going through the motions and kind of having some faith, some kind of blind faith that if I just did this enough, understanding would arise. And in some ways, you know, if we sit every day over years, we, in some ways that's true, but it's actually something that we can get interested in, and we can, and then it's, it inspires us because it's our own learning. It's not just, I'll sit and pay attention to my breath and then I've heard that good things will happen. It's like we're actually seeing in our own mind the process of awareness and what gets revealed and how we're learning more skillfully how to be aware, how to practice. So Saito Tejaniya talks about three kinds of wisdom. The first is what we read or what we hear about. So, for example, we might hear the teaching on right view that everything we experience is the nature of the body, the nature of the mind, just nature, not self, not personal. And so we hear that. And then the second level is intelligence, so we think about it. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, my anger isn't so different from your anger. It's not really my anger. It's just the nature of anger. When this happens, I tend to get angry, and when I'm angry, I tend to act in that way. So can I really say that's me? Or is it just nature? Did I make that happen? Did I decide to get angry during that sit? Did I choose that thought to arise, or did it just arise? Does the body belong to me, or does it just follow its own patterns? And then we can also think about the, not just, you know, whether on an objective level that's true or not, but practically, like Sayadaw Tejaniya says, what happens when we're angry? Or I noticed this other week with depression. He talks about depression, or when you say, oh, I'm feeling so depressed, or oh, I'm feeling so angry, what does that do? So when we say it's me, mine, it just makes it stronger. But when we practice seeing with right view, oh, this is an experience. I'm just going to practice seeing it as the nature of the mind and body. How does it work? How does it unfold? What does it feel like? it's easier to be with. So first level book knowledge, then thinking about it. So it's like we have a map and then we study it. So we kind of integrate that knowledge. And then the third level of wisdom is personal understanding. So we can read all the books, understand that, think about it, and then we put it into practice. We practice, okay, I'm going to sit and just be aware of things arising and passing. Practice not taking them personally. And then we might actually have an insight. Oh, yeah. This experience of the body and mind is just happening. And we might express it with words like that, but on this third level, this is our own understanding, something the mind actually sees, and it changes the mind forever to see personally, not because anyone told us, but we see, oh, when the mind does this, it leads to suffering or whatever. On any level of insight, from relatively mundane to a deep insight into everything changes. Again, those are just words, but in every moment, there's Dhamma. Dhamma, the way it is. In every moment, things are unfolding due to nature, not self. So we could, for instance, what we pay attention to is important. So even in this moment, we could pay attention to the fact that everything is arising and passing. And that has a certain impact. Another observation about practicing in this way that I observed in the last week was that practicing with this emphasis on awareness, and as opposed to what I'm aware of, and this emphasis on right view, on whatever's arising is the nature of the body and mind, and to actually get interested in the process of awareness. Like, is awareness there? Is it not? Like, and if it's not there, why isn't it aware? And I found, for example, a lot of times it wasn't there because the mind didn't want to be aware because there was something unpleasant. So, but then we actually get to see that instead of just going through with that and see, oh, well, does that actually feel better? Do I actually want to live a life of non-awareness, of distraction? Or is there a way, or is it actually subjectively feel better to be aware, even if it is unpleasant, and to notice then what the mind is doing in relationship to that unpleasantness? Complaining, poor me, thinking of ways to get out of it, all of which are stressful. But I found that just because I think it's so easy, even in meditation practice, to do it to have a pleasant experience and to assume that if we're practicing correctly, we're going to be having pleasant experiences. And so then our practice is coming from that place, as opposed to a more pure interest, like, I just want to learn. And I'm going to practice having faith that whatever's arising is just nature, and it might be unpleasant, but I'm going to practice seeing if I relate to it in this way, or how I'm relating to it, how does that change it? And I found that just practicing with that emphasis and that real interest in awareness, that real faith that this practice really leads to good things, and it doesn't matter what I'm aware of, it actually made things a lot easier to be with. Unpleasant experiences made them a lot easier to be with because I wasn't so concerned with the unpleasant experience. I wasn't really my focus. If we live our lives always trying to maximize pleasant experiences and minimize unpleasant experiences, that's pretty stressful. But if we live our lives interested in this lifestyle of awareness, of waking up in each moment, learning, then it doesn't really matter if there's pleasant or unpleasant. And if there's views around that, if there's assumptions around that, what that means to me, well, those are also objects arising. Those can be known. As long as there's some awareness with wisdom, then the mind can't be thrown too off balance. Like, when my mind really gets thrown off balance, it's because awareness is out the window and it's not, there's no wisdom. It's just, this is me, my problems, and it's suffering. So it's really practical to practice in this way, to train ourselves to see in this way that in every moment, something's arising. I thought of that as a protection. It's really a protection. But it's not a protection in the way we usually think about it, because it's not trying to control our experience. But in any moment that we could be show up for as best we can, fully present for, then there's protection in our intention there. There's protection that we're not trying to manipulate the moment. And so there's some integrity there that protects us. There's a little story in the suttas, the discourses of the Buddha, about a quail and a hawk. And the quail's domain was its dirt clods, and then one day it was strayed out of its domain and the hawk grabbed it. And I think the quail said, "Well, you only grabbed me because I was out of my domain. Put me back in my domain and we'll see how I do." So the hawk took him up on the bet, put the quail back in its domain in the clods, and then when the hawk dove down for the quail jumped out of the way and the hawk hit its head on the dirt clod and died. So the moral of the story, I just think it's kind of a strange little story. but it's about the domain. And so that's sort of the protection. As long as the mind is somewhere in the vicinity of awareness and wisdom, and that's our own awareness and wisdom, not some hypothetical awareness and wisdom, but as we have understood it personally, our own awareness and wisdom, to whatever degree that's developed, even if it's just like, oh yeah, I'm here, I'm aware every few seconds, or oh, this is unpleasant, I don't like this, but it doesn't seem like hating it is really helping. What if I just get interested in my relationship to it? So that protects us. That's the correct domain, you could say, for our efforts. If we really want happiness, it seems to be a productive place to put our efforts. And it's so counterintuitive and I've just been noticing that too this last week, where I've sort of been practicing in this way a little more, with a little more inspiration, and how it really, maybe I'll end with this point, how it's really in some ways one or the other, like to really practice in this way, I notice, oh, that means I have to stop obsessing about this future that I want, because that I can't do both. And like, it means, so it's radical, and it challenges so many of our assumptions about happiness. And if I just line things up quite right, but it's more direct. We're practicing directly with the mind, with the qualities in the mind, wholesome or unwholesome. And I'll just end with this from Saito Tejaniya. This is from his morning instructions, which are on our website and is sort of suggested reading for these weekly practice groups. So he's talking about kind of this either or, in a sense. He says, whatever you allow to live and grow in your mind, whether that quality is positive or negative, will, as you allow it to remain in the mind, grow strong and stronger because that legacy is being passed on. That's why if we want to cultivate meditation, if we want that to grow, we have to practice nonstop. Meditation is not a part-time occupation. It's not a pastime. It's something we need to integrate into our lives so that it's always there. Because the mind is like a zero-sum game. It's either positive or negative. We need to try to make what's in the mind every moment be something positive, because if it's not positive, it's going to be negative. In other words, something skillful, because otherwise it will be unskillful. And that's kind of an interesting, challenging statement, and we don't need to believe that. We can just check it out in this moment. What is the mind cultivating? What is it paying attention to? Is that leading to suffering now? Is it leading to ease, to wisdom, to attent, to receptivity, openness? So we have a few minutes. Unfortunately, I talk too much. We only have a few minutes. So maybe time for one person just to share any questions or just your own experiences with the practice of awareness, how it's what you're learning about your mind and about awareness. So what comes to mind?
Hi, I'm Kate. Can you hear me? Okay, great. I really just wanted to thank you, Gabe. That was really beautiful. I've never heard you speak and really enjoyed it. Something that comes to my mind that I think will be a point that I hold on to for a while is you said this is really just the nature of the body and the mind. And I recognize that throughout my life, I think I've really tried to control my body and my mind through things that I've learned through social, family, media. And for me to think about nature in my own body and my own mind is going to be really helpful for my practice and the evolution of my meditation, not only what I do within myself, but also as a teacher. So thank you for, I guess, stating that again, because I've heard it many times from other teachers and in different readings. It's nice to have the re-emphasis.
Yeah, and like even when you were speaking, just noticing what, like trying to control body and mind, what does that feel like? And body and mind is nature. What does that feel like? It's like, for me, it feels a lot less stressful. Yeah. So we're out of time. Thanks, everyone, for being here, listening. May our practice together this morning be for the benefit of all beings, loved ones, and people who are struggling can dedicate whatever merit, whatever goodness has come from our practice today and all of our practice, that we do it because we want to understand the causes of suffering and the causes for the release of suffering in our own hearts and then shared freely with everyone. Oh, thank you.
This talk, like all programs at Common Ground, is offered freely in the spirit of generosity. To learn more about Common Ground and its programs, or if you would like to donate, please visit our website, www.commongroundmeditation.org.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.